Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the Busby Babe Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Dams, joined once again by Nathan Heinschel and Polly Questel. And fresh off a pretty good vibes win by Manchester United, 3-1 over Burnley. How are we feeling?
Well, to answer your question, Colin, this was the only of the two Manchester United matches I watched this week, so I feel pretty good.
Well, I think that was the problem then. I think we found it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just ready to fight someone for Jadon Sancho losing out on a goal and an assist. Very fine margins.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't just that though. It was like Cristiano Ronaldo's goal. It almost felt like a robbery of Scott McTominay, who hit three really good long range shots. That one, you know, thwacked against the post and then was an easy tap in for Ronaldo. And was, you know, probably the only good thing that he did in that game.
He was like astonishingly bad.
Yeah.
And against Newcastle too. Like we've talked about this before in terms of like the things that he doesn't do and people get all upset about it, but like on the ball in the last three games, he has been horrific. He's tried to dribble past people that he can't dribble past. His passing has been atrocious. His finishing has been awful. He did score a goal today where he had an empty net tap in for his third empty net tap in of the season. And
well, it's all because of positioning, bro.
Right. Yeah. No, but he's turned up in good positions. Like, yeah, especially
those
tonight.
Instincts of his.
Yeah.
But like that's kind of
even tonight though, he would turn up like in good positions where it's like you want your striker to get on the ball and at the top of the box and turn with it. And like, and he was doing that. And then like the pass would just be freaking horrific. Like he's been so bad over the last three games.
I just felt like it was going to be a weird one today when you saw him. I think it was in the sixth minute. He had what I guess is at least for Ronaldo, basically an open net, and he scuffed that shot. You're like, all right, that's weird. That's the one justifiable reason why he continues to make the lineups, even though we all scream that maybe he's not as good as he once was. And then he's missing that shot. And then Scott McTominay goes and scores one from the top of the box, which was assisted by Ronaldo. And I was just like, the world doesn't make sense anymore.
It was assisted by Ronaldo because he took a heavy touch when he was very much trying to shoot it. And I'm honestly surprised he celebrated it.
Yeah.
She celebrated it right away, which was interesting because like if you think back to the Crystal Palace match, the Fred goal, he did not celebrate that right away. It was like the camera kind of cut away right as he was about to do it, but you kind of saw him look around and be like, oh, everybody's running over to celebrate this, like I should go too.
Yeah. And you know, the discourse basically since his first game has been, you know, the one thing he is still really, really good at is taking the ball and putting it in the back of the net, or, you know, those interchanges in and around the goal area. If that goes away, we really are kind of running out of excuses for him to be a first choice player starting over someone like Cavani in that position, who, you know, Cavani, like we saw last season, is not going to be able to play every game, but does so much off the ball that really boosts United's attack in these areas.
Another thing from the agenda that I'd like to bring up, so, you know, if we're going to pile on the guy, we might as well get it all out right now. Why is he still taking free kicks? Like because they've been doing the Premier League top 20 moments or whatever on NBC Sports Network. It's like, yeah, we got to watch all the free kicks he scored for United a decade ago. And like,
yeah, like three. It's like three. Yeah. There was the Portsmouth one. Another one against Portsmouth.
Score that Portsmouth one again, obviously, or maybe even like people are hoping he scores the one that he scored against Spain in 2018. But like, what are we doing?
Yeah,
his top free kick moment of that season was when Owen Hargreaves was like, actually, I'm gonna take this, and ran in front of him and put it in the net against Arsenal.
And probably didn't tell Ronaldo he was gonna take.
Oh, it. There's no chance he did that. No chance.
Well, and it's always been, at least today, I guess it kind of made sense because you didn't have Rashford on the pitch. You didn't have Fernandez on the pitch. And those are kind of the other two guys that I really kind of assume would be the ones that take
who
the free
also
kicks.
Are not good at free kicks.
Yeah, but I guess if we're, you know, choosing between in the case of free kicks, piles of shit based on the smell, you know, at least like they're less smelly. But I mean, Telles wasn't in there, so he couldn't take it. I mean, I guess
the last Sancho, time, but the last time United have scored, have scored from a direct free kick. So like not like a set piece, but like actually somebody shooting.
Was it the Chelsea match?
In the Premier League. So, all right. So the last time was actually was Bruno against Liverpool in the FA Cup. But in the league, it was, I saw this morning. It was Bruno against Bournemouth during Project Restart.
That was that 6-2?
5-2.
5-2, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, and I don't remember that.
So, like, it's been a whole season and then some for Bruno. Marcus Rashford has only scored once in the Premier League from a direct free kick, and that was the first shot of the Solskjaer era against Cardiff. Yeah. And then he scored that goal against Chelsea, and that's it.
That goal, though.
Well, I mean, all of, like, Rashford's direct free kick goals are, like, spectacular because, I mean, there was that one he had against...
Same with Ronaldo.
Yeah, he does have shades of Ronaldo in that like, respect like, with the free kicks.
Remember, Brent said it best of, like, he is the scorer of fantastic free kicks, but he is not a good free kick taker.
Yeah, I mean, he scores free kicks that you're like, there's no way in hell you should even try to attempt that if you were like, he told you what he was going to do before he took the free kick. Like, there's the Chelsea one, like, there's the Celtico one, the Benfica one, where the keeper actually caught it. I think it was supposed to be a cross, but he just fell backwards into the goal.
Oh,
yeah.
For a piece I'm working on, I just yesterday I watched like all of Rashford's goals from like his first 3 years, and yeah, there's some funny ones.
Yeah.
In Mourinho's first season, he had two goals where the keeper just lost the ball and Rashford ran behind him and whacked it in.
Hell yeah.
So for this game too, I think obviously Ronaldo was a bad performer on the day, but in general, Manchester United played a lot better. And we got good performances out of people that we weren't maybe necessarily expecting good performances out of, but also got a really good performance out of Luke Shaw, who finally got his first start back, I think in a couple months or so, something like that. Maybe not a couple months, but at least a month.
Yeah, I guess he's been out a while when you factor in that like we haven't played games.
Tello's got a couple games, and then all of a sudden Shaw's like, wait a minute.
Right, but then we had 2 weeks off. Shaw did play against Young Boys in the game that we immediately erased from our memories because it was terrible and it didn't matter. But yeah, Shaw had a really good game, and I thought one of the reasons he had a really good game was because of Jadon Sancho, and there was a very good understanding between the two of them, and I tweeted it, and someone was like, I didn't even think Jadon Sancho was playing that well. And it's like, yeah, it's not just about that, though. It's about the spacing and the understanding of, like, there was a really good rapport of when should I go and make a run? And when should I just get out of the way so that Luke Shaw can carry the ball? And when should I stay wide so that Luke Shaw can come inside and carry the ball? And when should I go inside to give Shaw space on the outside? Like, and a lot of times... people talk about the relationship between Rashford and Shaw, but like a lot of times that actually looks very clunky. A lot of times Shaw will run with the ball and Rashford will just stand there, and that cuts off Shaw's options because eventually he runs into his own man, and the man that is marking Rashford now can ease, like there's two guys there. And Sancho did a really good job of just getting out of the way. It also really helped that Burnley were playing very narrow, and that helped United out in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
And I have a hot take.
All right.
I think Sancho's really good at football. I really like that guy.
I thought you were going to go in a
different direction. Yeah, I thought we were like going to change the subject and like actually talk about something different.
No, I thought you were going to go in a different direction because I thought you were going to take my hot take.
Well, I would never take your hot take because I you and I just don't think the same way in football as I'm constantly, you know, hearing little comments from you when I try and make a point. but with Sancho, it reminded me during halftime because Rebecca Lowe she was trying to lead the conversation, and she had made it sound like, you know, maybe Sancho's just playing a lot better than he did 6 weeks ago. And it just reminded me about how like 6 weeks ago was when, you know, we finally started just allowing this guy that we spent all this money on to maybe play more than 50 minutes if he started, and played more than, you know, 20 minutes if he came off the bench. And because at some point he just had to build these relationships on the pitch, not, you know, on the training ground to actually just get into game situations. And it does seem like he's a lot more confident, obviously, than the very beginning of the season when he was real fresh to United. And we keep seeing these glimpses of, like, you know, we're going to get what we paid for, I think, out of him. I love that guy.
Yeah, he just looks sharp now. He's another player who, I mean, England made that deep run and he signed for us, you know, shortly after that. But then he went back on holiday and didn't really join us until, I think, the week leading up to the Leeds match.
And he was sick.
Yeah, and he was sick. So,
I don't know if it's something you can always rely on, but you saw in this game, too, he found himself on the left. He found himself on the right. I mean, he's got some fluidity to his game where if he needs to go find some space, he'll find some space. And, you know, generally you can trust his right foot to get the ball where it needs to be. And he's a pretty good dribbler. And at least right now, he's probably our best dribbler because Ronaldo's been not super great this year. Rashford has been awful. I mean, an absolute shell of himself when it comes to dribbling. So he's willing to take guys on, and he actually will have a little bit better of a win rate too, so he can get into dangerous positions like that second goal. So shout out to Jadon Sancho.
He's the best player on the team at getting the ball into the box. And he's, if not the best, he's the second best player at creating shots. And those are kind of the big things that United have been lacking last season and this season. And it's just so odd that, like, we haven't been playing him. And he made two out of three goals tonight. Like, if you're gonna go on to FBRF tomorrow, he's gonna have probably three goal creating actions, in that he set up that second goal with a dribble and then a shot, and then it was just an own goal. Although maybe own goals don't count for goal creating actions, so that'll have one. But either way, he created it, and then he gave the ball to McTominay, so he won't get an assist on that goal, but he'll get marked down for the action there.
Another robbery that Ronaldo took away.
yeah, I mean, I think the post took that one away.
Yeah.
But yeah, he is just simply incredible, and it just boggles my mind. He was the best player on the pitch, probably besides Fred against Crystal Palace, and it was weird that he was the one taken off. He was probably our best player, and that's not saying much because nobody was playing well against Norwich, and it was weird that he was taken off. He was dropped for Newcastle, which was weird, and we didn't really come into the game until he came on. And then he was tremendous tonight. Now, he wasn't the best player tonight, but he was very good. And that's good. You know, you can't have the same players carrying the load every night. You need other players to step up at times. And that's where my hot take comes in. You know who we really didn't miss tonight? And things kind of looked a lot more smoother without Bruno Fernandes in there.
Yeah. Still, Van de Beek couldn't play, though. Tough for my guy.
I think it was Sue.
I literally just read a tweet being like, Ollie didn't play him and Ralph didn't play him. Like, what are we missing? Like, what are we missing here? And it's like, he's not good. What are we missing? He's not good.
I certainly wasn't alluding to that with my Rick Ross gif. one last thing on Sancho, though, real quick, too. And I think, you know, the days are starting to blend together so much. I can't remember who made this point. It was either Polly or Carl, I'm going to assume. More likely Polly, because we're, you know, talking about Sancho as a United player in that context. But the thing that United's been missing for a while is when the guys – base performance, like their floor is a six, you know, a five, a six, a seven, and it's starting to look like that's, you know, that's going to be Sancho's bag for his United career. You know, on a baseline performance, the worst you're going to get from him is a five or a six, which is an average performance. And if you have a bunch of guys who play at that level and you don't have dips, chances are, even if it's not a convincing win, it's probably going to be a win as opposed to a loss, or it'll be at the very least a draw. So
it's not so much guys that... playing at that level, but like guys where that's their, if that's their basement.
So, yeah, that's their floor.
So, when, so if Sancho goes out there and throws out a five, and your other guy who might have throws out a five, you're going to have players who aren't throwing out fives that day.
Yeah.
I think that's what sets him apart from other winger options, I think. And that's something that we really expected for the last couple of years when we've been expecting him to come into this United team, is that, you know, when Rashford or Greenwood drop stinkers, for the most part, they're either just ineffective on the ball or they're not really getting involved much at all. Same with Martial, if you even want to count him as a winger anymore.
Or a United player.
Yeah. With Jadon Sancho, you have somebody who is almost always confident when he is on the ball, and he's such a dynamic creator from all positions of the pitch that I think he's really going to become undroppable at some point, if he's not already, which he probably should be undroppable already.
There are the players in this team that are undroppable compared to the ones that are easily droppable is just mind-boggling. It doesn't
Are you saying it's not a meritocracy at Manchester United right now, Paulie?
Yeah, it never was. It never was. But yeah, you go along with that. So it's not just what Sancho does on the ball, but like I was talking about before, off the ball, how he just knows when to get the hell out of the way to give Luke Shaw that space and let Luke Shaw do good things. And then as Colin was saying, you know, the floor of just other players, especially the wingers, is so much lower. Like that, even when they have Mason Greenwood, not since the Leeds game have I seen Mason Greenwood like this. Just fantastic. Coming off the right, finding pockets of space to receive, turning with the ball. A ton of things that he never does. His passing. It was all there. This is the Mason Greenwood that we want to see. Everything but a goal. Fantastic game. But this is the first time we've seen it since the Leeds game. And how many games has he played since then? A lot. And like, and as Colin said, we're getting to the point now where we could expect this week after week with Sancho. Like, we need to get to the point where Greenwood went, like, where the worst that he is ineffective. Because there are several games, for every good game that he has, he still has one or two games where he's, like, worse than ineffective, where he's just plain bad or invisible. And that's what needs to be raised. You're allowed to have that kind of game once in a blue moon, but it's got to be once in a blue moon. It's got to be, there's more games where you're just good or okay, and more games where you're simply like you were tonight. That ratio has got to be way more in on that side than on the ineffective or worse than that side. And right now Rashford's in a rut of form. But Rashford, this is what I'm writing about, is he's always kind of just been this guy who doesn't offer much beyond running in behind defenders. If he's not running in behind, he's not doing many other things. He's never really been an above average creator. He's always liked to dribble, but he's never created much from it. Unless you get him in a 1v1 situation with a defender, then he'll make that defender look foolish and he'll then go on and score. So it is nice for United to have that winger who is that dynamic creator, so that they have that second creator in the team. Because when I first saw the 11 today, I was a little worried to be like, well, we struggle when you put all the creative on Bruno Fernandes and then surround him with three guys who are shoot first, I'm just looking to score, not so creative players, whether that's Rashford and Cavani and Greenwood or Ronaldo, Cavani, Greenwood in this situation. And the team's always looked better when you have two creators, whether it's Greenwood, whether it's Fernandes and Pogba, or Sancho and Fernandes. So I just figured it'd be more of the same, but it wasn't, because Mason Greenwood just played at a level that we rarely see him play as a complete forward.
Yeah. I know we've had this Rashford conversation before, and I'm going to bring up something that Tim Howard and Danny Higginbotham talked about before the game, which was, it started out with them actually sounding, you know, semi-competent.
And I turned on my TV today and like immediately I was about to vacuum something and I just stood there. And my wife was like, what are you doing? And I was like, hold on, I'm listening.
She's like, no, back to the vacuuming.
They were talking about how players may have been affected by the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer leaving factor in terms of morale. Because
it was literally this.
Yeah, it was like when a manager leaves, typically the point that they made was typically when a manager leaves, most people are ready for him to leave. Whereas Ole is somebody who was pretty well liked within the club. And I'd made this point the last time we talked about it, that with Rashford, you know, that was a really good, strong connection he had with Ole. And now he's in a situation where he's playing, you know, an uncomfortable position, and he's probably going to have more responsibility, you know, doing things with the ball and in attack and attacking in transition, where the technical side of the game is going to become more important than just, you know, getting in behind defenders. I think it's going to be a period of adjustment for him. And I would really like to believe that, you know, at some point he could become one of the forwards that plays alongside Jadon Sancho in some interchangeable positions on that front line. But right now, I don't really know if Ragnick can risk that, I guess is what I would say. Just starting him every game. Like, if Rashford becomes undroppable, I think it's just going to expose him a little bit more in this system early on before he even has time to adjust to it.
Well, people get very... There's a couple things here. Is that people will be like, oh, give him a proper coach and they'll get the most out of it, or they'll get more out of him. And there's an element of truth to that. But what, you know, like that sort of happens when coaches put you in a system that plays to your strengths and hide your weaknesses. So like what Thomas Tuchel did with Jorginho at Chelsea, where it's like, hey, instead of having to defend all this area, we're going to ask you to do a very little, defend a teeny little area, and you're going to play to your strengths. Or exactly what United did with McTominay tonight, where it was like, hey, we're not going to ask you to like facilitate buildup. We're just going to have you run around, give energy, and make runs to the top of the box so you could shoot, because that's the best part of your game.
By the way, another player who benefited from Bruno not being in there tonight.
very much, for a few reasons. So Ragnick's system, like I said this when he first came in, like maybe if you put him in the system correctly, he could be Leipzig's Timo Werner. But he just doesn't seem to be playing like that. Like, and Rashford needs to adapt his game to that as well. But there, people get hung up on like, oh, he's 24 and he's young, and it's like he's not. He's in his fifth season at the first team level already, and you kind of get 10 seasons before the drop off happens for 98-99% of players. The very special ones get a little bit more, but there's nothing to say that Rashford's in that group. So there's an element of like you can't teach old dogs new tricks, and putting him into this system like isn't going to necessarily get his numbers to shoot up. It'll probably just be like you're going to get more of the same from him, and that's part of the frustrating thing. And it's the frustrating thing of the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer era. Like this is a spoiler to like what my piece is about, but Rashford's always been at his best playing as a second forward off of a main focal point striker. And his elite characteristic is, like I said, you get him that ball to run one up 1v1 with a defender, or just making those runs in behind. And 18-year-olds break in with an elite characteristic. And you get about 3 years where that can carry you, but then you have to develop other parts of your game. Otherwise, you become very easy to figure out. And if you're at a top club, you falter down and you go to the mid-table clubs, or you fall out of the game completely. It's the really good players who develop more to their game. Like Ronaldo was the pacey winger with all the tricks and everything. And he did that for 3 years, and then he added finishing, and he added the long range shooting. And then eventually he added the heading ability and honed in on, and when he left United, he really just became this, for lack of a better word, monster who was just so focused on scoring goals. And Wayne Rooney was a pacey guy who was a workhorse who could finish. or he could strike the hell out of a ball. And then when Ronaldo left, he added headers to his game, and he became this big time penalty box poacher. And then he added the passing, so that when his pace left him, he had something to fall back on that kept him in this game. And Rashford needs a striker that kind of creates space for others. So his first season when he was playing next to Martial or Rooney, two unselfish players that do that, was great. Then Zlatan came in, and Zlatan's not that kind of player, and he struggled. And then Lukaku came in, and Lukaku is that kind of guy, so he was great again. And then he played next to Martial, and he was great in a team that were, you know, they're playing on the counter and playing very much to his strengths. And then Cavani came in, and last season he started to struggle again. And this season, Ronaldo is not that type of striker either. So he's struggling. But like in all that time, he never developed anything else to his game. He never developed that ability to like get into the penalty box and get into good goal scoring areas and get shots from close in. And like you look at his shooting charts, and he did that. It's odd because he did it a little bit at the beginning of his career, and he very much did it when Mourinho was fired. Ali first came in, and he was on that good run of form. Like he was actually playing like a real striker then. But then a year later, in 2019-20, he took a grand total of 8 shots from inside the 6-yard box, and one of them was that breakaway against Burnley, and I think 3 or 4 of them came over the 2 matches against Southampton. So like basically they all. He barely got into the box, and since that into the 6-yard box, and last year and this year he's not stepped in. No. And it's like he's just never developed that other area of his game. And at 24 years old, 5 years into his career, you start to wonder, like, is it ever going to come?
Yeah, I would say part of that is positioning, though, because he was literally the center forward in that first run under Ali, the interim Ali period. And Martial was the one playing more off the left, whereas the next season they just switched those roles.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. It's just like, but under Mourinho, he got into those spaces too, even when he was playing like as the left wing. And like Martial under Mourinho, like got into those areas, and he's just not anymore. And Martial this season has like the in a tiny sample size, but 2 out of his 4 shots are from inside the 6-yard box. Like it could be done if you, especially because he's. Like, that's the whole thing, is that his role is not so much like as a winger, but more of a wide forward. And wide forwards should be able to get into those areas. And he's not.
I guess one more player that I did want to talk about coming back, it was not as significant as Luke Shaw, obviously, but I guess maybe my hot take is United are still better off with Wan-Bissaka than Diallo, in my opinion.
What?
Yeah. I mean, he obviously doesn't offer that much going forward. And I think Diallo was somebody who, under Rangnick, we've seen is constantly playing in a more forward area. You know, he's sending a lot of crosses in. Some of them are not very good, but he's also gotten a couple assists doing that. And, you know, just increasing the volume of distribution from that right-hand side is obviously beneficial going forward. But, and I think the Newcastle game was maybe an extreme example of this, is that Diallo kind of leaves the center back he's playing next to out to dry sometimes. With Wan-Bissaka, you have somebody who is more positionally, you know, rigid in defense, playing that right back role and, you know, offers a little bit more help. He also is a really good recovery defender, so having him back to stop breakaways is a benefit. And then, you know, I had another point, but I can't remember it now.
I definitely don't disagree with you, but I also don't know if I agree. I think when the structure's there, you can get away with Diogo Dalot. Like against Crystal Palace, where they pressed high, played a high line, and contrary to what people think, like high lines actually protect your defenders, especially the slower ones, more than not, because you stay compact and it eliminates players running at your slow center backs. It was able to mask, because they were compact and together, it was able to mask all of Tella's and Dolot's defensive deficiencies. And against Norwich and against Newcastle, the forwards kind of pushed high, but they weren't pressing. And therefore, the defensive line wasn't pushed high up the pitch. They were back, and it looked like United have looked under Solskjaer this season because they were stretched out. The midfield's asked to cover a lot of ground. They inevitably can't. And there's gaps everywhere, and Dolot's defensive deficiencies highlighted. And so you're right there that Juan Bissaka provides you a lot more defensively, and it makes you look a lot more sound. Going forward today, I didn't think he was an issue, but I also didn't think it was an issue because Burnley were very narrow, and they kind of just let him have the ball. So, and that helped in a lot of ways, because usually, like when McTominay makes all those square passes, it's to Wan-Bissaka, who then has nowhere to go with the ball. Also because, like, Mason Greenwood is drilled to that touchline because he's wide, because Bruno Fernandes is in the middle. The fact that they weren't playing with a solo number 10 in the middle really helped in allowing Greenwood to find space. It allowed Wan-Bissaka to find space. And when the ball found him, it was like, oh, there's not three people immediately coming at me to close me down. I could just carry the ball forward until a pass opens up. So, like, that very much helps. So there's a lot of the good that we saw today, like, is with the caveat of, like, all right, it was Burnley. The same way that, like, in September, we blew the doors off of Newcastle, who are really bad, and it's like, all right, it's Newcastle, calm down. Burnley are a level on points with Newcastle. So in one regard, it's nice because, you know, we were played off the pitch. We were nearly played off the pitch by Norwich. We were not the better team against Newcastle. So it's nice to go out there and take a relegation team and just play them off the pitch right away. But, like, let's see them do this against a half decent side.
This is also a Burnley team that hasn't played in almost 3 weeks because of COVID.
Right. And Well, now you're making an excuse, because when we hadn't played in 2 weeks and you said, oh, well, it's been tough, we haven't been on the training ground or playing games, it was, oh, stop making excuses. So no excuses there for Burnley. They're just a bad team. But, like, let's see you do this against an Everton, who aren't even that good this year, or a Brentford, who are a very well-coached team. Like, let's see you do it against that for a number of players. And if they could do that, if they could replicate these performances against teams higher up in the table, that's a very good sign.
Yeah.
Wolverhampton might not be a bad test, and, you know,
Wolverhampton's a great test, because they're actually a very good side.
That'll be one of those. That's going to be a nice leveler to kind of see where things are at, because at that point, I mean, we're technically, oh gosh, are we already into like a month and a half, 2 months of the Ralph Rangnick era at this point? Like, at some point,
we're only 6 points behind us. Jesus,
it's kind of wild that he's already been around for this long, and it's like, so that'll be a nice sticking point to see, you know, where the improvements are coming right now, because after a couple weird performances, you're already seeing the people talking about how, well, if this thing doesn't go well in the 6 month, you know, interim spell or whatever, like, what's the expectations then is when he moves into the back room for another 2 years and all of that kind of garbage, you know, because the expectation was that somebody could just come in and fix everything, you know, within a game or two, which is just not realistic. Outside of what his predecessor did. that was not the norm. I don't believe, especially when you had a team that was not playing together.
The XV was not as low when Rangnick came in as it was when Solskjaer came in, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, to add to the Marcus Rashford point too, this is one of those instances, I think, where, you know, this can be pretty relatable for anybody really. I mean, this is when, you know, sports is a job as much as anything else that you do. And if you got a manager that you really like and you really like working for that person and that changes, it will affect your work ultimately, because it's weird. You got to get used to what the expectations of the new person is, because ultimately they're above you. They have decision making power over you. And so you need to learn how to work within their boundaries, the context of, you know, what their expectations are. And it's quite possible that this is, it's quite literally Rashford just learning how to play under a new manager.
Yeah, and there's not much to say, like, that Rashford doesn't enjoy Ralph Ragnick. Rashford played the first, how many games, this is his fourth game, Rashford played the full 90 minutes in each of the first three games, despite how awful he was in all three of them. Like, he's on bad form right now. Can't deny that. And somehow managed to make it 90 minutes. So it's not like he could feel like he was unfairly treated by the guy. So we don't know what the relationship is. And this is the whole thing. Is like, I hate how they always just use the term dropped. And it's like, to me, being dropped
means squad refresh.
You're out of the team for a while. Like you've been dropped from the team where
like Phil Jones has been dropped.
Yeah.
Rashford was dropped by Mourinho for like 2 months at a time.
Right. Or like, basically like, in 2019, Nemanja Matic was dropped by Ali, and like, he ended up going, like, he was quote unquote injured, but they never actually told us what the injury was. He went to Dubai for a while. And then in December, it was like, we recalled him back into the team. Rashford could end up starting on Monday. And then it's like, he was rested for this game. Well, I think he could do well with a few games out on the sidelines, maybe play one out of the next three games, and then start working him back into the team. But you could easily just be like, oh yeah, he was rotated. Like when Carrick dropped Fernandez against Villarreal, and it was like, did he drop him or is he just rotating him out of the side? Like, cause he came on with a half hour left and then he started the next match. And Ronaldo didn't start against Chelsea. And it's like, was he dropped? No, because he came on and then he started the next match. Like, I think a lot of times people make a big deal out of something and it's like, all right, no, like, he's just not playing today and he'll be back next time. And it's totally normal and fine.
Well, and all the comments that have come from Rangnick and his disciples in the Premier League and it, you know, anybody else that has kind of a top six, top eight team is, they are frustrated with the amount of games that are being played right now. And I'm sure Rangnick looked at it and was like, oh shit, we're actually literally playing three games in 7 days.
And United actually have the best schedule of like all the teams in the, for this period. Like, cause usually you go Boxing Day and then you play on the 28th and then you play New Year's Day, and United play. So it's like, there's like 2 days in between games. United played Monday, then they're playing Thursday, and then they're playing Monday again. Like, they have a lot, and then they don't play again until like Saturday. They have a lot of time off here. They just have a shit schedule in that they have to play Wolves, Villa, and Villa.
Between all the congestion and the fact that this was only, what, Rangnick's fourth or fifth game coaching, like, I don't think that he knows what his best starting 11 is based on the way he wants to play. So there, you're just going to see things fluctuate.
For sure,
and that's fine. I don't think it was realistic, and I hope nobody, it's clear people did think this, but, you know, let's be realistic. Like, the people that were undroppable for Ali might not necessarily be undroppable for Rangnick just solely based on the way they wanted their teams to play. Things were going to change.
Yeah. So far, those people are still undroppable though. It's really easy to be in the media though, because all you have to do is be like, wow, that player plays way too much and the manager doesn't do a good job rotating the squad. And then as soon as like, he rotates a player out one day, go, whoa, this is a big move. He dropped him from the team. Like, big. It's almost as if people just go, oh, the only time you can drop players is in a cup match, as if like every other game is a league cup match.
I mean, don't you play FIFA?
Well, and then if there's ever a bad match, then you just call everybody whinge bags.
Although that was pretty funny.
What was even better was the Football Ramble talking about it. They're like, so what is it? Is it like a bag full of whinges? Like, what kind of carrying device is that? Is it a satchel of whinges? So,
yeah.
It's a purse.
All right. So I think that's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you sometime next week. We got to figure out around Manchester United's weird schedule, but I think,
they play Monday. It's actually gotten easy again.
It's Monday, Thursday again?
No, it's just Monday.
Oh.
It's Monday. It's actually a huge pain in the ass that, like, we're not playing on the weekends anymore.
Yeah, just in time for me to return back to work, so we can continue on with the memes of Nathan doesn't watch the games.
Right. It's also a 12:30 kickoff or Eastern time.
Yeah,
12:30 Eastern time kickoff on Monday. Like,
do they know that everybody's back to, like,
yeah, right? It's like we're still doing New Year's Day, but it's like, no, like, New Year's Day is observed on Friday, not Monday.
All right. Well, I guess we'll figure that out. But, yeah, at least, hey, Nathan has access to writing things for us again. So go check out his match report. No, he literally could not log in to.
Yeah, I know. He had an excuse for not writing anything, but now you're letting the world know.
I mean, hey,
if they don't see anything from Nathan for a while, it's all on Nathan.
As soon as we finish this podcast, I can finish writing the match report. They're going to see something real soon.
All right. Auf Wiedersehen.
Go watch Licorice Pizza if you don't live in Mississippi.